Welcome to the Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back on my favorite day of the month, Podcast Friday, with my amazing co-host, Al McDonald. Al, what are you saying these days?
Well, you said it, favorite day of the month, Podcast Friday. Always look forward to speaking with some great people today, no exception. And yeah, really excited about the lineup that we've got of people to chat with today.
Yeah, for sure. And on the pod today is Joe O'Connor. Joe is the CEO and co-founder at Work Time Reduction. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Great to be here, Robin and Al. Delighted to join you.
Well, I don't know about you, Al, but I already like the theme of this podcast being work time reduction, right? So I'm looking forward to diving into this with you, Joe. And before we get started, I do have to do a special shout out and thank you to our friend Joshua Siegel for yet another fantastic introduction. And again, I've said it so many times here, it's proof, really good people know other really good people. So Joe, so great to have this introduction, and I'm really excited to get into it with you today. So I thought we could start at the very beginning in the obvious, the name of the company. What sparked your interest in reducing work time? Because Al, as our CEO, I want him to just hear every word that you have to say around this topic today.
So as hopefully you'll be able to still tell from my accent, I'm originally from Ireland, and I first got interested in this subject back in 2018. I was leading some research in the Irish Public Service, looking at work-life balance, looking at work time, a whole host of related issues. And what we discovered was that we had a lot of working parents, mostly women, who had already reduced their hours, often to juggle or to balance domestic responsibilities, parenting. It was very common coming back from maternity leave, for example. But when we started digging into the data and having conversations with their managers and with the employees themselves, we started to discover that in almost every case, their job expectations and responsibilities were largely unchanged when dropping down to 4 days. And the output and the performance that they were producing each week was also largely the same. So that got me really fascinated in this concept, Parkinson's Law, that a task expands to fill the time available for its completion. And yeah, I guess back then this was a passion project where I truly believed that there was an opportunity to declutter the work week and optimize the way that we work. And that if we got the motivation right, if individuals were able to do this in that way, then what about if we take a collective approach to this, and what kind of productivity benefits might there be for organizations who take that approach?
So when you were back in Ireland, you had just said this was a passion project, and I imagine it was something you were doing kind of on the side. Tell us about how does this go from that to becoming your full-time focus, and now this is running a company based on this whole idea.
Well, I talked to a guy yesterday who told me that in January of 2020, he signed a multi-million dollar contract, and in March it was voided. And he was on, I think, one end of the spectrum where COVID was definitely not good for his business. I'm probably on the other end of the spectrum in that I was fortunate enough to be probably one of a handful of people actively doing stuff in this space pre-COVID, back when I think most people thought the 4-day work week was kind of a crazy idea. And obviously the pandemic really changed the landscape. It changed, I think, employees' relationship to work. It changed their priorities. It meant that time as a benefit and flexibility more generally became something that employees were demanding to a much greater extent. But I think it also opened the eyes of a lot of employers that maybe there's a different way of doing things. There's other new ways of working that could potentially benefit my organization. And maybe if you think back to that Parkinson's Law example, we're not thinking the right way about productivity. We're not talking about it the right way. We're not measuring it the right way. And this kind of relationship with hours worked, which is kind of really a vestige of the Industrial Revolution, this isn't necessarily something that's relevant in a huge amount of industries, job types, and roles in the 21st century.
I think it's such an interesting idea. And again, this is one of the reasons why we wanted to chat with you on the podcast to dive into it further. But I do have a question. What brought you to Canada? Why did you leave Ireland to pursue this in Canada?
So early on in COVID, I launched a pilot program on the shorter work week. It was the first coordinated trial anywhere in the world, small scale, about 12 SMEs. But that led me to the States. I had an opportunity to basically take that model that I developed in Ireland and expand it to a big trial in North America, ended up leading another one in the UK, which got a lot of publicity with 61 organizations. And so we spent 12 months in NYC, which was a phenomenal experience. And we took a decision that actually we believed there was serious potential to grow this movement in North America. We didn't want to leave that behind, but we also didn't necessarily want to settle down and start a family in New York. And I had some friends here in Toronto, so I knew the city a little bit, and it felt like a good fit. And yeah, we're just under 2 years now, and no regrets so far. It's living up to our expectations.
Joe, you've hit on a lot of things already, but you did talk about, you know, the work week. Some of the attitudes are really still built around, and you said, the Industrial Revolution. If I got a widget machine that produces X number of widgets for 40 hours a week, it'll produce twice as many in 80 hours a week, and it'll produce three times in 120, right? So, but people aren't widget machines. And I think that's where you're going down the path. How do we measure productivity with people? And how do you fight some of the misconceptions that are out there about the 40-hour work week and why it shouldn't change? Why would anyone reduce work hours? Because obviously, that's just going to reduce productivity, right?
I think at a macro level, I would push back on the idea that this is a radical concept. I think that it is an extremely radical view to say that the work week that we had when 20% of women were in the workforce, and the work week that we have when we're about to see this incredible explosion of automation, artificial intelligence, and, you know, a whole raft of new ways to find efficiencies and productivity gains. I actually think it's a much more radical position to hold to say, actually, the 40-hour work week, the 5-day work week should be set in stone forever and should not change. So I think one of the big opportunities here for organizations when it comes to thinking differently about productivity comes down to this view. I often get asked, you know, if you can find all of these efficiencies within a 32-hour work week, then why would you not just do all of those same things, have more efficient meetings, make better use of technology, eliminate distractions, and just still have the 40-hour work week? I think the bit that that misses is the impact on employee engagement, on motivation, the psychological dimension around this. If you say to people that the only reward for being better at your job, for doing better work more efficiently, is we're going to create space for more work, that's not really an enormous incentive to drive innovations, to drive process improvements. And what we found is that organizations that take an approach where they say, if we can find these opportunities to improve productivity and efficiency, we're going to share that benefit with you in a very, very powerful currency, which is giving people time back to do the things that they love, to spend time with the people that they love. That creates an incredibly powerful environment in an organization to drive really positive change.
So can you talk about, have you got some examples of companies that you have worked with where you've been able to demonstrate what you just said?
Sure. So as I mentioned, we had 41 organizations in that North America trial, 61 in the UK. Across those 102 organizations, 95% decided to stick with their 4-day work week policy at the end of the 6-month trial, which in and of itself, I think is an incredible reflection of success. They saw year-on-year revenue growth of 15%, which I'm not saying those two things are directly correlated, but I think it does demonstrate that growing successful organizations were able to adopt this and to make it work. And I think, you know, one of the big attractions for organizations with this is around recruitment and retention. It is around using this as a differentiator for their talent proposition. So to give you one example, an organization I worked with here in Toronto, Sensi Labs, led by a great guy called Jay Goldman, who wrote a book called The Decoded Company a number of years ago that some of you might be familiar with. They were attracted to this idea initially because they were finding it difficult to attract and retain engineering talent. Because as a kind of small to mid-sized tech company, you're competing with Meta, you're competing with Google. So the 4-day work week for them was an opportunity to engage employees in this endeavor of driving productivity. But it also meant that if and when they were successful, they had an offering that meant that even if we're not paying top dollar, we're still able to keep our best people. We're still able to attract really, really high-end talent into the organization.
Joe, there's a quote I'd asked you about before, and I think it's such an interesting concept. So I said to you, I'm going to ask you about it on the podcast. There's a quote on LinkedIn that you have, and you say, time is the most powerful incentive for innovation there is. Can you talk about that a little bit further for us?
Sure. I believe that the shorter work week today works best when it's positioned as an incentive rather than a perk, which doesn't mean that employees might not interpret it as a perk from the point of view of, you know, is this an organization that I want to stay with or I want to join? But I think organizationally, if you compare this to unlimited PTO or you compare this to pay increases, I think that the difference here is that if you pay someone more money, it's typically interpreted as that's a reward for my past performance, my current performance. That's effectively compensating me for my value to the organization today. The idea of time as a benefit, because it's linked to, in any project I've been involved in, it's linked very directly to collective performance accountability, to driving efficiencies in the business, to improving productivity. That's something that it not only acts as a perk when it comes to attracting and retaining talent, it also acts as an incentive for people to think differently about how they're working, to generate new ideas, new solutions, new ways to do their work better. So this is not about doing the same work quicker or more intensively. This is about finding ways to do better work more efficiently. I think particularly now in this landscape where we've seen lots of data where leaders in organizations are struggling to get people. 55% of leaders, according to Leadership IQ, are facing resistance from their employees and a lack of buy-in from their employees to adopting and integrating new AI tools and technologies. I think this comes back to the idea that there's a lot of fear, there's a lot of skepticism, there's a lot of uncertainty about what does this mean for my job. And I think there's an opportunity to reshape that into a positive, into something that's a win-win, where if we can be at the cutting edge of new technology, if we can use that to drive efficiencies, there's going to be a benefit, a really tangible benefit in that for employees. So I guess what I meant by that is this really acts as a forcing function to do things differently in your business that no other benefit that I'm aware of has that same transformational impact.
So Joel, if I look at our own firm, we were chatting before we started recording, Al and I, years ago, me, Al and Joe, we instituted summer hours. So what that means is July and August, you're leaving at 1 o'clock instead of working the entire day. Is that a form? Are we kind of dipping our toe? Is that what you see? Or it has to be, no, you have to go to a 4-day work week to make this concept work. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
No, I mean, our organization is called Work Time Reduction very explicitly because this is not a one size fits all approach. You know, a 4-day work week will not work for every type of organization. I mean, even the 4-day work week itself as a concept is very easily simplified and misinterpreted because there's a whole raft of different versions of 4-day work week. Is it a universal day off? Is it split shifts and rosters? Is it maybe different variations for different parts of the business, depending on their needs? But we've absolutely seen lots of organizations adopt things like half-day Fridays, summer hours, 9-day fortnights, which may be a step on the road. It's quite common that organizations who do that and do it successfully will take the next step to move to more of a 4-day or a 32-hour work week. But for some organizations, maybe who might be smaller, they might not have the same level of resource available for service coverage, that might be the right solution for them today. So I absolutely do think that you're heading in that direction. I would encourage you to think about, are we doing that simply as perk? Or are we doing it as something where there's a quid pro quo and there's a trade-off where there's an expectation on people that in exchange for this time back, that actually we're going to find ways to drive business performance.
Now, I do have to point out that we're recording this on a Friday and you are here and you are recording with us on a Friday. So, you know, just want to, you're technically working today. So just wanted to point that out for you.
I am. And I'm going to be very transparent with you in saying that as the leader of my organization and do a lot of client work with the UK, where our afternoons tend to be out of bounds. So my work week that I've constructed is I take a half day on a Friday. It took me to finish about 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock.
Good for you.
I took the rest of that time back. You know, I might finish at 3 o'clock on a Wednesday. And I'm fortunate to have the flexibility as a leader to be able to do that. I think that's a good example that this is not one size fits all. It's about figuring out a model that works best for that particular individual, for that particular team, or for that particular organization.
So, Joe, I think I'm hearing again that one size doesn't fit all, which makes sense. But a couple of follow-up questions to that. Number one is, have you encountered some situations where companies have tried some variation of a four-day work week and it just doesn't work out? And maybe what were some of the reasons around that? And then the second one is, what is the biggest challenge? What's the biggest pushback that you hear from companies about this concept of a four-day work week?
So the biggest challenges that I've observed from organizations who either haven't been able to find a way to make this work or who have eventually succeeded, but done so after a very bumpy, chaotic transition. The first is what I would call the light switch effect, where a CEO wakes up on a Monday morning and says, you know what, I have this great idea. I've seen other organizations have managed to do this four-day work week thing. Why wouldn't we be able to do it? And by Friday, they've introduced the policy with a lack of, you know, intentionality, without proper planning and preparation, where in reality, what you're trying to do is you're using the discovery phase and the planning phase as a way to attack the obvious inefficiencies in your business, uncover some less obvious ones, so that almost by the time you've introduced the policy itself, you've figured out to a pretty significant extent how you're going to be able to operationalize it. Another big challenge that we've seen comes down to the culture of the organization and their approach to leadership and their approach to measurement. And what I mean by that is, if you've got a culture where there's a significant amount of mistrust, you're probably going to struggle with this because this relies on a pretty significant degree of two-way trust, that kind of push-pull of offering people this greater flexibility, greater autonomy in return for a higher elevated expectation around accountability and performance. That type of approach complements strong positive cultures. It won't fix a culture that fundamentally has some significant deficiencies in and of itself. So when we do the diagnostic phase, often what we're doing is we're trying to identify at a team level, at a departmental level, where might the challenges lie and ensure that those challenges are proactively addressed in the lead end to actually making this transition. I think that's really, really important. And one more that I'll mention is a really important one for professional services organizations, and it's around how they manage client expectations and client boundaries. Because I've seen so many well-intentioned law firms, architecture and design firms, marketing agencies, accounting firms, where they come to this and they want to do it. They buy into the concept. They see that the potential benefit for employee well-being, recruitment, retention, all the rest of it. But their one red line is everything that we currently do when it comes to servicing our clients, that's sacrosanct. That's a red line. That can change. And I've always challenged that because what we often find in those types of organizations is they have a kind of an approach of when the client says jump, we say how high. And that's a really, you know, on the face of it, that's a very, very positive outlook. I think we'd all agree. But the challenge is often what we then find when you look underneath that is in those organizations, every single request, people feel like it requires an immediate response. Every single client demand, people feel like it requires immediate action. So what do you create? You create this culture where there's constant multitasking, task switching, context switching, flow disruption. There's a lack of proactive focus to people's work. And that's actually a productivity killer. So you actually do need to figure out how can we maintain or improve service standards, but it doesn't necessarily mean we're going to continue to do the same things in the same way that we've been doing before we made this transition.
Yeah, you've hit on so much there. And it's interesting that you talked about the light switch effect. And in many of the conversations we have, we speak with a lot of chief people officers. And when they're talking about changing culture, the comment that comes up over and over again is you can't change things overnight. It's got to be small incremental changes to get to the end versus just changing in and putting in a new policy and then everything changes. So I think you've said that again.
And the other thing I would say on that, Al, is if you design something very quickly, let's say almost overnight, the chances are that's almost certain to be top down. So in other words, the C-suite have designed the model and they've sent out a communication to say, from this Friday, this is what we're doing. The challenge there is, even if that works in the short term, it's less likely to be sticky because people don't own it. This works best as a bottom-up process improvement and innovation endeavor where people are given the tools and are given the agency, you know, The most detail-oriented CEO in the world does not know the day-to-day intricacies of each of their employees' jobs well enough to say, here's how you need to redesign what you're doing to become more efficient. So you need to give people that power. I think that's fundamentally important to the success of this initiative.
Joe, I was listening to a podcast the other day, and the podcast host, it was a business podcast, and they were talking about, if you're trying to sit there and ignore AI and the developments that are coming, you're going to get crushed. Now, that was his advice, lean into AI. And that's something that me, Al, and Joe have talked about, and we're leaning into it as much as possible. The platform that we record on here with the podcast leverages AI for some of the stuff that we do. In terms of what the future of work looks like, what do you think developments such as AI, how do you think that's going to affect the four-day work week? I mean, looking into the future, here we are at 2024. Our next end of decade is 2030. How do you think this is all going to affect what we're talking about here?
So I think at an organizational level, we've already seen how a lot of the companies I've worked with in the past 5 to 6 years who've successfully reduced their work time have used technology to streamline certain administrative processes, have automated certain tasks or certain steps in their processes. And so obviously in the last 12 to 14 months, the scope and the potential for technology to actually drive those kinds of efficiencies has increased exponentially. And it's only going to continue to do so in the next 5 years. I know this is a sensitive subject for Canadians, but I feel like today's AI tools are probably more the Blackberries than they are the Apples. So this is going to continue to develop. What we see today, the potential is only going to get greater. So AI has the potential to drive the efficiencies needed to reduce work time on that side. But as I mentioned earlier, it can also act as a very powerful incentive to engage employees with adopting and integrating new AI tools and technologies. And so if you get that right, you can see a future vision for an organization where they're at the cutting edge of both talent and technology. I think that's a really compelling vision. I don't believe that tomorrow's market leaders are going to be the types of organizations with command and control leadership who believe in hustling harder and working long hours. I don't think that that's where the future is going to take us. And then if you zoom out and you look at this at a kind of macro level, you know, you see people like Bill Gates, Jamie Dimon from JP Morgan Chase, both of them predicting that AI could lead us to a 3.5 day week. So in many ways, maybe they're even more ambitious than I am. We see Steve Cohen, the billionaire owner of the New York Mets, is investing heavily in golf because he's so convinced that the future is going to be a 4 day work week. So I would say to leaders that some very, very reputable business leaders are pointing that this is the direction that we're heading in. And the question is, are you going to be the early adapter or the fast follower that does this proactively and strategically and gets the benefits of being an early mover from a talent perspective? Or are you going to be forced into doing this by market forces or because your other competitors did it first? And I think that that is a genuine choice that many leaders are going to be faced in the next half decade or so.
I think this is such an exciting time to be in business. And one of the things that I love about conversations like this is it puts things on your radar, gives you things to think about. And I'm sure listeners will come away from this podcast thinking, that's some interesting things. And hopefully it'll develop some conversations among leadership. And I know, Joe, we always get DMs after the episode. I know we're going to get a ton. So I would fully expect people will be reaching out to do some introductions, which I'm always happy to do. It's my favorite thing to do. This has been amazing. And I'm so glad we're connected and Josh put us together. And I look forward to future conversations. But we've arrived at the point of the episode where Al has his signature question, a little more philosophical. And I think you've kind of answered it already. And I see the effects of it, but we'll throw it at you anyway.
Yeah. And before we do, you know, there's one thing that I did hear today that I got to admit I don't like. And it was the golf thing that you just said. Man, if I got to spend more hours on the golf course because I get a shorter work week, I think I'll just stay at work because, God, I hate golf. Anyway,
Al will send Joe.
Anyway, that's an aside. Here we go, Joe. As society grows great, when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So can you talk about any of those proverbial trees that you might be planting?
You've stumped me here. So if we're talking philosophically, we just talked about the work week and we talked about the impact of AI. And I think as we zoom out and we think about the future, if you look at the last 10 to 20 years, we've seen MAGA in the US, we've seen Brexit in the UK, we've seen the growth and popularization of far-right movements where there's been popular backlash against democracy. I think this is one of the big challenges of our times. And I think a lot of that, if you dig underneath the surface, a lot of that is people's disaffection with feeling like they were left behind by globalization, feeling like they were left behind by advances in technology. If you think back to the last 20 to 30 years, we've invented the internet, email and digital communications technology, high-speed broadband, incredible advances in global banking and commerce. But yet, people's work week and what they're expected when it comes to work time has completely not changed whatsoever during that time. So I think as we think about how can we ensure a fairer, more equitable distribution of the spoils of the kinds of advances that we're likely to see in the next 10 to 15 years as a result of AI and artificial intelligence, I think that the shorter work week is a very tangible way that people can feel like they're sharing in that benefit. And I would really encourage people who are thinking deeply about where we're headed as a society here in Canada and more generally to not just think about this at the organizational level, which is, to be honest, where most of my day-to-day work is focused, but to think about actually, you know, where will it take us if AI's role is to displace, is to disrupt, but isn't necessarily to actually enable people to have greater liberty, to have greater autonomy, to have greater flexibility in their work and in their lives. I think that's a really important question and that we need to grapple with.
Well said. On that note, I think that's a great place to wrap it up.
Yes. Thank you so much for joining us today. And thank you for sharing your journey. I think it's been really interesting. What's the best way for people to reach out to you if they have questions about yourself or what you're doing at Worktime Reduction?
Best place is to either go to our website, www.worktimereduction.com, or they can find us or me on LinkedIn. And yeah, we'd love to continue the conversation with anyone that's curious.
Perfect. Thanks, Joe. Well, that does it for today's episode. We really enjoyed this conversation. As always, we hope you did too. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or by joining the conversation on LinkedIn. Success leaves clues, my friends. We'll see you next time.